Success Mat Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Happy Tuesday and welcome to the Brad Sesmat Show. And they always say, if you're having a good time someplace, bring a friend. I had such a good time yesterday hosting this show that I brought a friend, Greg Esposito. Well, first of all, I'm Jeff Munn. If those of you who don't know me, and it's a very big club, I'm the voice of ASU women's basketball, and I just basically show up wherever somebody's waving a paycheck when they're not playing games. To my right, your left, is Greg Esposito. And I want to, again, as we did the last time we did this, I'm going to give Greg 30 seconds to talk about what he's doing now because it's pretty interesting. But you may remember him from his work on Suns.com. And that oddly named postgame show, The Sips. And John Bloom and I still need to have a talk about that name. Before we get into the show, 30 seconds. What's Greg Esposito doing now?
Sarcastically tweeting. No.
There is a market for that, by the way.
There is. I actually used to get paid for that for 5 years, ironically enough. But I'm actually hosting a podcast on NoCharacterLimits.com.
Yes.
Now becoming very much Arizona sports focused now that I don't work in the industry and can freely speak. And also working, running a marketing department for a company called Fun Brands. It's a national company here in town.
Excellent.
And freelance writing here at Sports 360 AZ and some national sites as well.
I've done a little of that, and you're getting ready to be a dad for the first time, which is terrific.
The most terrifying and exciting job I'll ever have.
You got that right. I can speak from experience. Get your sleep now while you've got the chance. Okay, a lot of things going on, and things that are kind of breaking since the last time we visited. We will get into the D-backs game last night, which I think was a real gut check game for him. But the major news, and I think this is something that is worthy of kind of going ahead of the baseball game last night, was the story you tipped me off to, Greg. Mayor Stanton, a word leaked out last night on AZ Central, and you're seeing us on Sports360AZ.com and AZ Central. Mayor Stanton of Phoenix will make his State of the City address this morning, or today at noon. And in that address, he is going to come out in support and wanting to get the ball moving on building a multi-purpose arena downtown for the Suns and the Coyotes. My first reaction when you tipped me off to that story was, this is really the best way to go for all parties involved. And by all parties, I mean city and the two teams. And we'll get to the ASU situation in a minute. But is that the way you look at it and say, this is probably the best thing overall?
As a fan, yes. As somebody that understands the dirty little secret about sports, that it's all about money making, I say absolutely not. Feels like the mayor is trying to kind of force a arranged marriage here. And I get it from his perspective. I get it from downtown Phoenix's. But I do not see a benefit for the Phoenix Suns to go into this because I'm not sure what the Phoenix Coyotes can bring. The Suns right now in their arena get all the naming rights fees, all the advertising money that comes into it. They manage it, so they get the money. They're not sharing revenue there. Bringing in the Coyotes, unless they're a tenant, and we've seen how they've been as a tenant in a building, I just don't see how financially it makes sense for a Phoenix Suns team to welcome them with open arms, because they're going to have to split revenue with a Coyotes team where, in all likelihood, the Suns are going to get a new building with or without the Coyotes. Now, whether it's downtown or not, that's a different debate, but they're going to get a new building. So why split revenues just because it sounds like the right thing to do? That's my guess, is what the mentality is with the Suns and just in general right now with that group. There's not a real benefit. I don't know what the Coyotes would bring to the table unless they're going to offer up Shane Doan, which hey, you guys need a face of a franchise. Shane Doan's done pretty well with that, but I don't know what they bring to the table in a negotiation. But I totally get it from the city of Phoenix. You want to maximize that building.
Now, let me play this out a little bit. The Coyotes, to my knowledge, are not really in a position financially to help. The way that the city would fund this is through a hotel motel rental car tax. There has to be some approval to utilize the tax that actually initially built America West Arena, which opened in 1992. But the Suns also originally, way back in the Jerry Colangelo era, did help finance the building of that arena. I think Robert Sarver could help finance it. I'm almost certain that Ice Holdings, which owns the Coyotes, could not, which opens the door to me to say, okay, the Coyotes have to come into this thing as a tenant. Now, the problem that existed with the Coyotes when they shared an arena with the Suns was not about landlord-tenant. And I'll take 30 seconds, if I can capsulize it, to tell the story. When Jerry Colangelo and his architects were designing America West Arena back in 88, 89, 90, they had two plans on the drawing board. Plan A was a basketball-centric building that could accommodate ice shows and maybe take the International League Phoenix Roadrunners away from the Coliseum. And that version of the Roadrunners really didn't need 18,000 seats. They would still get 12,000, 13,000 suites. Plan B was hockey, basketball, make them both work in case an NHL team was coming. At that point, Jerry Colangelo picked up the phone, called John Ziegler, at the time was the president of the NHL. They didn't really have a commissioner. And he asked Ziegler, do you see the NHL coming to Phoenix in the next 10 to 15 years? Ziegler, from what I'm told, was rather rude on the phone to Jerry and said no and slammed the phone down. And Jerry just turned to his architects and said, plan A. Well, we all know what happened. 5 years later, 6 years later, Gary Bettman, who's now the commissioner and knew Jerry very well, came to him and basically begged him to take the Winnipeg Jets. Jerry, being a community-oriented guy, took them in. And about 5 seconds after the Coyotes hit the ice at America West Arena, people started complaining about obstructive UV seats. But Jerry was told the NHL's not coming, so they went with a basketball-specific building. This time around, I don't think he would run into that. There are examples, Greg, and we both know them. I think the United Center in Chicago, Wells Fargo Center in Philadelphia. There are a lot of shared-use buildings in major American cities, and you don't hear people complaining, oh, there's obstructed view for hockey. Nobody with the Blackhawks ever complains about the sight lines at United Center.
Barclays Center in Brooklyn that right. We just built now has the Islanders and the Nets.
And obviously we know about Madison Square Garden. You can go on and on and on. It can work in terms of the fans being happy. As to the tenants, okay, this is just my opinion. I think you could set up a deal where the Suns manage the building, the Coyotes are a tenant. I remember specifically because I worked there that Jerry Colangelo worked very hard to set up a lease deal with the Coyotes where they could be viable. In terms of how much of a percentage of concessions and parking did they get. In fact, some people felt like Jerry went overboard in giving them opportunities to be viable. So to go to your point, I think you alleviate that issue by just saying, look, the Suns have a track record, and they do, of managing a building very successfully. And we all know the people with the arena who have won more awards than you can count for operating that building. And I could see Mayor Stanton saying, look, we have a track record here with this management group. Let's give them the steering wheel to the arena, and we'll make certain the Coyotes have an opportunity to make a go of it financially.
Oh, to your first point about the obstructive view seats, I completely agree. Ironically, those were probably my favorite seats I ever sat in at a sporting event because they were cheap, it was rowdy, it was fun. So that was always one of my favorite places to watch a Coyotes game when they're downtown. Is it viable? Yes, I think it's extremely viable. Can you make it work? Sure, but that's in a vacuum. When you look at it, a lot of egos involved in this on both sides,
right,
in terms of ownership groups. So that's a problem there. And then I look at the Coyotes, and maybe this isn't fair. Maybe this is a stigma after having gone through the last, you know, what is it, 12 years of them potentially leaving, starting back in the going to Portland in the early 2000s, that rumor. But I feel like, and we've all had this roommate where they're just they're kind of the roommate. Usually it was a college roommate that just didn't carry their end of the bargain. wasn't the greatest person to live with. I feel like that's what this tenant relationship would be like, because the Coyotes have had so many financial issues. Do you really want to, if you're the Suns, build a lease agreement where you're somewhat subsidizing another franchise in your market who is really competing with you in the end, because you're playing in the same seasons, you're going for a very similar dollar, and then you're moving them into your own marketplace downtown where you already have the advantage on them because you're the downtown team, they're playing in the West Valley. Business-wise, I don't know that I understand. And if you talked to me 5 years ago, before I'd worked on the inside, I would have had a much different view on this. I would have 100% believed this is the answer. This is the way you have to do it. But when you've seen behind the curtain and you understand how the business side of all this works, you realize that, you know, it's not always about what's best for the city or how can you help the sports market. It comes down to the bottom line for the team and looking out for what's best for them. And I just don't see how the Suns get over the hurdle of the business side of this. I would love it, like I said at the top, as a fan, there's nothing more than I want than to see a dual purpose arena downtown where we can really build that city as the center of that city as the focal point of sports in this state. But I just don't see it happening from a financial point.
We got about 90 seconds before our first break. If this plan were to go forward, where does this leave ASU? Because the last we heard, ASU was very close to a deal with the Coyotes to build an arena where the Coyotes would play, ASU hockey, and probably men's basketball would go somewhere in the East Valley. If the city were to move forward with a Suns-Coyotes arena, I wonder where ASU stands with everything.
I think ASU would actually benefit because we talked about this before the show. I don't think ASU needs a 16,000-seat stadium. A smaller arena actually probably benefits them, and it sounded like everything I was hearing, they were going to be the ones footing the bill for a majority of this arena anyway. So why not build a facility that benefits you and your programs more than it does just having another tenant that's a pro sports team? I actually think it might be a better thing for ASU in the long term, but I still think in the end, the ASU Coyotes venue is what happens.
I have to admit, I'm intrigued by that possibility because we hear great things. I'm not going to suggest, and I know we're right up against a break, that ASU hockey is going to be on a level with the NHL. But we keep hearing things about the potential for that growth of that program in terms of the marketplace is the ceiling's really high. So it would be really interesting to see them get into a building that they could share with an NHL team. And I the other thing about that is I wonder if they build that building, and we can talk about this after the break, what happens to the other programs that operate within Wells Fargo? And I broadcast for one of them. Well, we can talk about that after a break because we've already pushed the limits of this of the time. And Jordan Hamm's back there going, come on, guys, let's go to a commercial. Okay, we will. This is the Brad Sesmatt Show on a Tuesday. He's Greg Esposito. I'm Jeff Munn. You know who you are, so stick around.
Welcome back in. It's the Brad Sesmatt Show here on a Tuesday. I think it's a Tuesday.
It is.
All right. We'll go with a Tuesday. I am Greg Esposito. He is Jeff Munn. And really excited to be here. We spent the first segment talking about kind of the state of these arenas for teams here in the Valley with Mayor Stanton getting prepared to what sounds like make his pitch for a Suns and Coyotes arena. We were talking about the implications for ASU, and I want to kind of finish up that conversation before we move on. How do you think it will impact potentially ASU in terms of smaller sports if they do go the way of combining with the Coyotes and ASU hockey?
My guess, and I've never heard anything official from this on this subject from Ray Anderson or Rocky Harris, who's one of his associate athletic directors. But so I'm just going to throw something at the wall at a dartboard and see if the dart hits. At a lot of schools, and the first one that pops to my mind is Ohio State. And I'll give a quick example. In March, Ohio State's men's team made the NIT. And they play their games at a really huge arena that it's on campus. I think it's run by the university. I'm not really sure. Same weekend, Ohio State's women's team got to host first and second round games in the NCAA tournament, and they put the women's games in their old arena, St. John's Arena. I was surprised that building still existed, but it's a fairly large arena, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The point I'm making is this. I could see a scenario, potentially, where if the Coyotes and ASU build an arena, you move men's basketball there, you leave the non-revenue sports, women's basketball, gymnastics, wrestling, volleyball, at Wells Fargo. I've never heard anybody say we absolutely have to bulldoze this place. The other thought that just crept into my mind right before we came back out of the break is, and I haven't heard this discussed at ASU either, I wonder if there's a thought or a plan kind of in the blueprint stages of renovating Wells Fargo to accommodate a hockey rink. Now, they couldn't put the Coyotes in there because it's just a nightmare with campus and classes and what have you. And the Suns, many, many years ago, people may not remember this, when Jerry Colangelo had just purchased the Suns, he and his investment group, and before they started talking with the city of Phoenix about America West Arena, there was a thought, a brief thought, about moving the Suns to Wells Fargo Arena. Now, obviously, it would not have worked out for the reasons I just said. But I think the end result is, if they build an arena for the Coyotes, for ASU basketball and hockey, the women's program might go with them. I could see a scenario where they say, we're going to keep the other non-revenue sports at Wells Fargo because, for one thing, an arena like that for the Coyotes, you got to find some other things to put in there, like concerts, shows, the Sesame Street Lives of the world. You gotta start competing for that dollar.
Well, at what point is it spread too thin in the valley, though? Because you're gonna have a building potentially in Tempe. You're gonna have the building in Glendale that's gonna have to find a way to fill dates, or they're basically gonna shutter $183 million building, and then you're gonna have a building downtown. At some point, you're gonna run out of things to put in these spaces.
Yeah, and you're right. And this was a concern when the Coyotes left. I was working at the Suns at the time, and there was a great concern within the hallways of America West Arena. How do we fill dates? I heard a rumor. I've never had this substantiated, but I've heard it in the hallways that the people that ran the Glendale Arena originally were offering the building almost rent-free to get concerts in. And it put America West at a huge disadvantage because they weren't going to go to that route. Eventually, they found a way. I still think most of the major concerts do end up downtown, and it's for a couple of reasons. The location, geography, and the track record, as I said, of the arena management group. No, I don't see. Listen, my thought is if they build an arena for the Coyotes and the Suns, or the Coyotes and ASU, I think at some point Glendale Arena is going to become the modern-day Phoenix Trotters Park. And for those of you who haven't lived here long, there, if you drive out on I-10 west of Phoenix, as you go along, you'll see this huge building. And it used to host trotters races back in, the very early 1960s. And you have to remember, at that time, you were really talking about the middle of nowhere, and the thing just went ka-dunk. Never made it financially.
It cost $10 million to build.
Yeah, and it's sat vacant for 50-some-odd years. They used to do occasional swap meets there. They don't even do that there, and you wouldn't want to go in that building now because it's just sat there. Windows are broken. I could really see Glendale Arena going that route. And it makes me sick to think of it because of all the money that was poured into getting that arena built. And I have to admit, and it's easy to say now, all along I kept thinking, don't do this. Don't do this. This won't work. And I hate to say it, I think Westgate's beautiful and I love it. I've been to a couple of Coyote games. I don't, you know, my schedule doesn't allow me to get out there a lot. But it's a beautiful setting. But I just don't know if they lose the Coyotes, they're going to have to seriously consider getting the bulldozers lined up and do something else with that land.
Well, the interesting thing about that, the whole situation was messed up with the way Elman, who owned the Coyotes at the time, it was basically a way for him to get Westgate built, and then he flipped the team
right
after that. So the whole situation from word go was difficult out there. The only reason I love the Trotter Park analogy is because that means 30 years from now it'll be used in a movie and get blown up, which the Trotter Park was actually used in a Charlie Sheen movie in the 90s where they blew out the windows out of the whole thing. I'm glad somebody else knows about the Trotter Park. That's always been a weird obsession of mine, but I think you're completely right with Gila River Arena. If the Coyotes leave, and there's no legitimate, I mean, there really is no legitimate option after that for them, they're going to be in a world of hurt. And I don't know what you do. I don't know the financials, but you would think at some point shuttering it would actually save money rather than trying to operate it without a tenant.
I agree. And you can't go out, you're not going to get another NBA team. You're not going to get a minor league hockey team and make a go of it financially. The niche sports, yeah, they could try to convince the Rattlers to come there. I don't think that's going to happen. You're not, you know, who knows if indoor lacrosse still exists. There just isn't a lot of options. And you have to remember, too, Glendale is a suburb. They just don't have the financial base to sit there and just let that building sit there and wait for something to happen. A city of Phoenix could wait longer. The city of Glendale can't. And I just wonder in the back of my mind, is there some way they could get the Cardinals, who I think have done a really nice job of filling University of Phoenix Stadium, their management group, of filling it with non-football events in the offseason, if they could turn to the Cardinals and say, you know, SOS, save our ship.
Well, that relationship's been strained the entire time, too, though. I don't see how they get out of it whatsoever. And I don't understand, as a municipality, how you chase out the one tenant that you had in a building that you've already spent the money on. It's not like you're going to recoup the money on that
building.
Yeah,
there's nobody coming to fill the void.
So how do you not make a go of it? How do you not figure out how to get along with the one tenant you have in your building?
The one event that they still have. By the way, Sarah McClellan of ACCentral.com, there's another story about the Coyotes today that they have purchased one of their minor league teams and reportedly are moving it to Tucson. That's the original reason we wanted to get Sarah on the show, and she's going to be with us next segment. But we'll also talk to her about this, about the Coyotes' perspective on this arena. The only other event that they do regularly in that arena, sports-wise, is the high school basketball tournament. And again, you can't make a go of it on a high school basketball tournament. It's a great event, but you can't operate in black ink just on one event, as great an event as the AIA high school basketball tournament is.
Well, and if you have a brand new crown jewel downtown where the Suns are playing, I have a feeling a lot of that stuff's going to migrate down there anyways. If the scheduling works, because, you know, why would you not want to be in the center of the valley rather than out in the west side? If you're in the center of the valley, like everything, easier for teams in the East Valley that are playing in those championships to get downtown. I feel like concerts are going to be attracted there. The question is, does the city do the deal if it's just simply the Phoenix Suns, or is this a, we need both teams or we're not going to put the money up? And we're not even talking about the fact that there has to be a vote on this. And are we in a point where people are so frustrated with you know, public financing going to these sports arenas that they don't vote for it, that they don't support it? I don't know. And then you add in the fact that the Diamondbacks on top of it sound like they would prefer the city to help with Chase Field rather than the county. So this is a very, very messy situation. And you're looking at right now in the Valley, Our whole sports landscape is about to change for better or for worse in the next year, with determining where these teams will play and who are running these buildings.
And there's other wrinkles to it, and we can get into that with Sarah McClellan of azcentral.com. She'll join us next segment to talk about this story, the Coyotes looking to put their perhaps their top farm club in Tucson. And a story I heard yesterday on radio in Las Vegas that has seemingly just completely slipped under the radar. And it is a hockey story. We'll talk about it next. Brad Sesmatt Show, Greg Esposito, Jeff Munn, and you, azcentral.com and sports360az.com. We're back on the Brad Sesmatt Show. Before we get to Sarah, you have some breaking news. Well, breaking news, sort of.
There is a report from Jude LaCava of Fox 10 on Twitter. He's saying sources inside the Suns inform him that the interim tag will be removed and Earl Watson will be the next head coach of the Suns. I'm not sure I fully buy it. I think it's leaning towards that way, but Jude is saying that what he's hearing is that's the case. I'll text some people I know, see if I can find out anything on that, but it's interesting. It seems like all signs are pointing to that being the case moving forward. Maybe we can get into that a little bit in the final segment.
There was a report yesterday on KTAR that he had received an interview and he was the only candidate that had been interviewed to this point. And maybe in our next segment we can, because I was hoping we could get into some basketball talk. But so much news is going on and so much of it involves the Coyotes. And I wanted to bring on, we wanted to get in touch with Sarah McClellan, the outstanding hockey writer for azcentral.com, who is just now recovering from being in and out of airplanes and airports all over North America, from Edmonton to Vancouver to Florida. And so she's barely had time to breathe. But Sarah, good morning. It's Jeff Munn and Greg Esposito. First things first, you were at the first of all, you were at that event last night with the Ford owners and Dan Bickley. Did this subject about Greg Stanton and making his declaration to build a multi-use arena, did that come up at all last night?
Yeah, it came out toward the end of the discussion. Actually, there was like a Q&A format towards the end where, you know, everyone in the audience had the option of fielding a question, and it was brought up by someone in the audience, so they must have been checking their phone to see when the story was published last night on AC Central. And obviously, the arena topic was a popular segment of the talk overall, and you know, each of the owners had, you know, an option to give their two cents on where they stand. And I think it was, you know, obviously feedback and opinions that we've heard in the last few weeks. And, you know, I don't think anything out of the ordinary emerged last night, but it was interesting to hear it from them, because so much, you know, we hear all these other voices, or we read what they say. We don't ever get to see them. And so to see them in that setting, talk passionately about how they feel about their teams and finding a future and solidifying it in the Valley, I think it resonated, and it was definitely a popular topic, and it seemed to really resonate with the group that was there last night at this event. So, yeah, it was a cool opportunity to see them talk and have them all gather in one room.
What are you hearing in terms of the Coyotes and where they stand on the arena situation? Obviously, Mayor Stanton has an agenda as to why he'd love them downtown, but what are you hearing that LeBlanc and the Coyotes ownership wants to do?
Right now, it sounds like they're exploring three possibilities in the Valley. That was something that Anthony LeBlanc mentioned just even yesterday, last night at this talk, that there's three plots of dirt right now that the team is exploring as possibilities. And, you know, they hope to have an announcement soon. I think, you know, ever since the season ended, you know, they've mentioned in a few weeks, and it sounds like they're closing in on that date, you know, maybe by the end of May, and wanting to announce where they stand with that. And they've been very vocal about this timeline, I think, you know, with the stakeholders and the groups that they're exploring with. So obviously we know Phoenix obviously is an option too, like you mentioned, with Mayor Greg Stanton, you know, kind of trumpeting his option and where he'd like to see maybe the team marry up with the Suns in Phoenix. But we know Tempe is there, and Scottsdale's always been an option that I think has always kind of lingered ever since. You know, the team looked for somewhere else to go after leaving downtown Phoenix the first time. So it sounds like it's coming to a head, and I think the timing is appropriate, because even though we know where the Coyotes will be next season, we know they'll be back at Gila River Arena, I think the clarity obviously is much overdue. And, you know, you think the preparations are already, you know, started for next season, and prepping for, you know, season tickets and sponsorships and corporate deals, that, you know, that progress or that process for the following season, I mean, that's going to come up soon, too. So to know where they're going to be and know what their options are once their lease agreement with the city of Glendale ends after next season, I think that they want to get a head start on that. So I would say look for an announcement sometime in the next few weeks.
Sarah McClellan from azcentral.com covers the Coyotes and does a great job at it. She's our guest on the Brad Sesmatch Show. Greg Esposito and Jeff Munnin for Brad. In the midst of all this, and I do want to get an update on where things stand in relation to prepping for next season in the front office with a GM. But we also, you had a story this morning that the Coyotes, and I realize minor league teams are not that expensive, but they apparently do have the money to purchase their current American Hockey League affiliate. And according to your story, they are looking at moving that franchise to Tucson. Were you surprised?
I mean, not necessarily, because this is something that's kind of been on their agenda for a few years now, I think, and moving their affiliate closer. And obviously last season was the first that the American Hockey League actually had a West-based division. The Pacific Division debuted last season, and it had participants, you know, representing the Kings, the Ducks, the Flames, the Oilers, the Sharks, so all these West-based teams now had their minor league farm system, you know, very close. All were set up in California. And I know the Coyotes were interested in joining those ranks, but obviously they weren't able to facilitate something soon enough to join this new division last season. So they signed a three-year agreement about a year ago with Springfield in Massachusetts, and now they've inked an agreement to purchase this Springfield franchise with the hope of moving it to Tucson. So I think this is something that's kind of been on their mind. It's been an objective to try to move the team closer, really close, only a few hours away. And, I mean, there's obvious advantages to that. Not only, you know, to continue to grow the sport locally and in Arizona and give, you know, that platform, that opportunity to go watch hockey here in the state live at a competitive professional level, but just the logistics of having your prospects close and within reach, I think, is a huge advantage. Before they were in Springfield, Massachusetts, the Coyotes had their prospects in Portland, Maine, not Portland, Oregon,
right.
Portland, Maine. So that was all the way across the country. And it's difficult. If someone gets injured and last minute you need a roster replacement, it's not always easy to get someone on a plane, especially if they have to go from Portland, Maine to Boston to wherever the team is. So having those resources just, you know, down the I-10 now is very advantageous. So it's not done yet. Obviously, this agreement, this purchase agreement has to be approved by the AHL's Board of Governors, and they obviously need to continue to work something out with the city of Tucson. I know talks have been ongoing to facilitate something at the Tucson Convention Center, but if this all works out, I think it'd be a real big boost for not only the state, but also the Coyotes having their minor league team so close to draw on.
I completely understand why they'd want the minor league team in the state, but why Tucson over a place like a Prescott Valley, who had been a proven market with minor league hockey previously, where Tucson's kind of struggled to support minor league teams in the past?
Yeah, that's a good question, and I think we're still, you know, kind of learning all the information on this. I know we haven't officially heard from Anthony LeBlanc on this, but you're right. That was a city that, you know, or a town that had supported a team until just a few years ago, and they have a facility already there. So I'd be interested to see if this is something that they think that maybe this can kind of give a facelift to hockey in Tucson and maybe reinvigorate the area. The appeal, yeah, obviously it's close, but you're right, so is Prescott Valley. So I'm curious, too, to find out why they have that area over other options in the state. I'm not sure if the infrastructure is a little bit more conducive maybe than what was happening in Prescott Valley, but I think just the proximity overall is like you mentioned, something that is advantageous, and it'll be interesting to see how it's received by the locals in that community.
All right, I've got to ask the important question and the serious question here. Have we heard any rumors about the name? That seems like the thing the internet always loves to guess about. So
I haven't, but you know, sometimes I'll click on those hashtags on Twitter that are popular, and I thought I read someone say, you know, there is a team currently that's called the Heat, but maybe this one will take on the Dry Heat or something to that effect. So maybe it'll be a fun play on the desert in Arizona. I'm not sure yet, but that's just fun to speculate and to read the comments on social media about the ideas because, adding another team to the desert, I wonder if they'll play off that theme.
I want to see the Peyote Coyotes and bring back the old school uniforms. That's what I'm hoping for, but I don't think that's going to happen. So,
just Sarah, be sure to tell Ice Holdings no Roadrunners. That belongs to Phoenix. We're not letting Tucson have the Roadrunners.
Yep, I remember that.
Yeah, there's a little too much history there. Real quick, Sarah, anything to report on the GM search?
You know what? I think it's still ongoing, and I think they're optimistic that they're going to be able to adhere to that time frame of 2 to 6 weeks that Anthony LeBlanc announced last week when they dismissed Don Maloney from his post as GM. So I think the process is ongoing, but that timeline is intriguing because there are a lot of mileposts kind of coming up this summer, obviously, with the draft. The draft lottery is just in a few weeks. I think having that kind of structure in place and having the personnel kind of solidified is important. So I think there's the urgency there to keep the search going and obviously find someone as soon as possible. And I think they're confident that they can find that person and solidify a name, you know, within the next few weeks, you know, when they gave that 2 to 6 week time frame a week ago.
Are we officially saying it will not be Dave Tippett?
Yes. You know, we talked to Dave last week after the Coyotes had wrapped up their season, and he said, I don't want to be GM. I never said I wanted to be GM. So he's going to maintain his post behind the bench. And, you know, I think that doesn't mean that he's not going to have his say. I think this is a transformation that's really trying to trumpet, you know, communication and collaboration. And so I think everyone's going to be able to contribute their two cents and give their insight. But this doesn't change his title. He will still remain coach, and that will be it.
Sarah, we appreciate it. Got you on short notice, and I know there are all kinds of things going on, so we appreciate you squeezing in a few minutes for us, and we know where to get all the latest going on with this. Your stories have been right on the cutting edge at azcentral.com. Thanks for joining us. Have a good summer, as quiet as it can possibly be.
Thanks so much, guys. You take care.
Thank you. Sarah McClellan, azcentral.com. It pleases me so much that the Republic will send her on the road, have her travel. For a couple of years, they didn't send a writer on the road with the Coyotes, and it's great. We're up against a break. We got a basketball guy here. We haven't gotten around to talking basketball. I mean, really, just about basketball.
Am I still a basketball guy? I don't know.
Am I a little more? Well, I'm women's basketball. I got a great story about that, too. Greg had the news. Apparently, there are reports Earl Watson will have the interim tag removed. We'll talk a little bit about the draft and what I was mentioning yesterday about the mock draft. And I apologize. I keep saying we're going to talk about the Diamondbacks team. We will after a break. Brad Sesmat Show, Greg Esposito, Jeff Munn on a Tuesday. Hang on, D-backs fans. We will talk about that big win last night. Coming up after a break.
Welcome into the Brad Sesmat Show, Greg Esposito, Jeff Munn. Happy to have you back here for the final segment on the show. It's amazing that we're already through most of the show, Jeff, and we're finally getting to the Diamondbacks. You've been promising people we're going to talk about this.
I feel bad about this because they had a really what I call a gut check game last night, an extra inning win over the Giants, and I'm going to just work up the details now. That was a game last night, and they won. Jake Lamb tied it with a home run in the ninth inning, and we've said many times Jake Lamb is one of those guys that has to perform well for this team to be in that position of contention in the National League West and the National League in general. And I'm getting the box score in front of me here. The thing that struck me, the Giants got a 4-run fifth inning, and it looked for all the world at that point. They led the game 6-2, and you thought, uh-oh, here we go again. But the D-backs scored 2 in the sixth, 2 in the eighth, Giants an insurance run in the eighth, but then a tie-breaking run in the eighth, and then the D-backs tied it in the ninth and then won it in the 11th inning. Archie Bradley, 4 1/3, 5 runs, 7 hits. Can't feel too bad about the outing he had. De La Rosa pitched out of the bullpen to get the win. Ziegler got pitched an inning to get the save. To me, the significance of that game, and again, every time that they lost a game the first 2 weeks, we kept saying, oh, it's just one game. And you could say that about this game last night. But I think given the fact that it's a team that they are looking to overtake in the National League West, they know how good the Giants pitching is. I think to get an extra inning win where they score nine runs, that is significant.
I agree wholeheartedly. I'm still concerned about the pitching, though. Archie Bradley struggled in the 5 innings he was in there. Had, I think, 105 pitches. Really just didn't seem to have his stuff, and I get it. It was a spot start, but you've had so many issues with the starting pitching that it just concerns me. It was good to see the offense get going last night. Good to see him win 2 in a row. I like Lamb in that 2 spot, but if the pitching doesn't kind of level out, they're gonna be in trouble.
Yeah, and we still don't know anything new about Shelby Miller and his next scheduled start. They list Thursday starter for the road trip finale as to be announced, so apparently that hasn't been cleared up yet. But the good thing, and I mentioned this yesterday, nobody in that division has gotten off to such a blazing start that the D-backs find themselves 6-7 games out. So they've had the opportunity. They won 2-3 at San Diego. They're 4-3 on this trip, all against teams in the West. So they're making up some ground little by little. I agree with you, though. They need to get the pitching settled down. You're not going to win games 9-7 every night. That's just not going to happen. You have to have stronger efforts on the mound. Robbie Ray goes tonight, Greinke tomorrow, and then we'll see about Thursday. So, and again, we've had so much stuff going on, the Suns, Coyotes, Arena, Earl Watson, that I almost forgot, and I apologize, but didn't want to mention that. All right, now basketball matters. And again, as you reported, Jude LaCava is tweeting out that Earl Watson is going to have the interim tag removed. It's not been confirmed. First thoughts, though, if that story is true, and we did hear a story yesterday also that he did get an interview. You started to hear more and more the last couple weeks of the season that there was starting to become a groundswell of support for Earl Watson to get this job.
Yeah, I think it depends on what the plan is for the next few years. If it is, okay, we accept that this is part of a rebuilding process. It's time to grow young guys, and there's not going to be a sense of urgency that you have to try to rush to make the playoffs. I like the hire because Earl Watson is a guy that there's going to be some growing pains. He's got to learn on the job with this, as he was a D-League assistant coach last year, moved to the Suns as a back row assistant until January when they let Mike Longobardi and Jerry Seastings go, became a front row assistant, and then all of a sudden became interim head coach. It's going to take time to learn everything. Now, he did a great job in the final 33 games of the year in repairing a locker room that was fractured. There's no doubt about it that the locker room was fractured. A lot of that obviously had to do with the Markieff Morris situation and dealing with that, and kind of just it was a fractured locker room. He repaired that. He got those players to believe in him, and I think he will be a great coach either on the pro or college level down the line, but it's going to take time. It's going to take time for him to grow into this job, and if the hope is next year you turn it around and you're legitimate contender to make the playoffs, I don't know that it's the right choice. I love Earl the guy, great to work with, but I think you probably need somebody with a little bit more experience if that's the plan. If it's a three-year plan to get back into the playoffs and grow young guys, Earl Watson's perfect for that. He can get young guys to believe in themselves, believe in a system, and they will grow under him. I just don't know what that timetable is with the Suns right now.
By the way, we're not going to have time to get into the last night's playoff games. And frankly, at this point, with all the news that's going on with the Suns, there isn't enough time to get into it. And I guess I'm like a lot of other people. I'm like, get to me when we get to the second round and Oklahoma City plays San Antonio, and I'll talk to you at that point. Did Toronto even their series with Indiana?
They did.
And Dallas upset Oklahoma City last night. All right. I mentioned this yesterday, and I know that we talked about this the last time we did a show together. The conventional thinking is you don't go really, really young. And the Suns have three first-round picks, and everybody assumes, well, they're going to package a couple of those picks and get a veteran. But I'm looking at, and I mentioned this yesterday, the NBA draftnet.net does a mock draft. They've got the Suns taking Dragan Bender from Croatia at 4, assuming that's where the pick is. At 13, they would take, and I'm going to mispronounce his name, DeJounte Murray out of Washington. Did I get it right?
Yeah, I believe so.
Oh, wow. And then at 28, Thon Maker, the center forward out of Australia, who decided a couple weeks ago to try the draft and had been heavily recruited by Bobby Hurley at Arizona State. Assuming that's the case, we both agree, backcourt's in pretty good shape. You get Bledsoe back, you've got Booker. You've got Brandon Knight. You're pretty well set in the backcourt. Alex Len, serviceable as an NBA center.
I think we'll be better than serviceable.
Yeah, I agree, and that's not fair to just say serviceable. I think he's given you more than a glimpse of an ability to be a dominant scorer and rebounder in the low post. Okay, if they were to go, if things stay the way they are, not financially, just basketball-wise, if you're going to commit to a rebuild, why not just hang on to those three first-round picks and say, okay, we're going to let the kids learn and let them grow?
I wouldn't be against it, and bring on Bogdan Bogdanovic too from Europe, who's been fantastic, who was a draft and stash guy. I'm all for committing to a youth movement and accepting that, and just being very upfront with the fan base and saying we're going to build a young, entertaining team that will develop. And we don't know when that playoff moment will come, but we know it is coming. And with the Northern Arizona Suns playing in Prescott Valley, the new D-League team that the Suns own, I'm all for having these younger guys, especially, you know, a Thon Maker at that tail end of the first round with that Cleveland pick, that you can kind of move back and forth from the D League. Use that as a true developmental league and a minor league system, and have some of these younger guys on the end of your roster that you can move up and down. Commit to youth movement if you don't have the pressure to make the playoffs. I am 100% okay with that. You look at a team like a Minnesota, who's exciting, young, not a lot of veterans.
That's a great example.
But the fan base knows something good is coming. You want to see a Devin Booker grow. You want to see a TJ Warren grow, an Alex Len, whoever they draft in the first round of this year. I'm okay with that. Another thing, you brought up Brandon Knight, and I've talked about this online. And I know it's getting a little bit away from the draft, but you saw today that Jamal Crawford won Sixth Man of the Year again in the NBA. That is what Brandon Knight's future should be. I don't care a $14 million price tag, which that number is not going to look that big after this summer. With the cap going up to $92 million, probably going to be in the $100 million range the following year, you're going to see a lot of bench guys making in that $14 million range. So don't give me the argument that he makes too much money to be off the bench. I think he's the perfect six-man guard that can come in, score a lot of points, get really hot, and play. And I don't understand the stigma of coming off the bench in the NBA. It's about, can you help the team win? Can you fill those minutes that you're on the court and be successful with it? And do you finish the game? Because a lot of coaches are going to ride the hot hand if you're playing. And if this is all about the development of Devin Booker, you cannot start Brandon Knight next year. You have to get him to accept a role off the bench or get him out of town. That's the only two options you have with him if you are committing to Brandon Knight. Because I'm a firm believer that Eric Bledsoe is a potential all-star guard in this league. So you do not move him out of the starting lineup. It's Brandon Knight, and it comes down to, is his ego willing to accept a move to the bench, which I think it should.
Now, you mentioned Minnesota. I saw them in a game in Portland earlier this year, and it's the first time I'd seen Karl Anthony Towns in person. That kid is ridiculous, the talent that he's got. He can run. He's athletic around the hoop. He can score. He can rebound. He can do everything. And tied to that, along with the other players, the young players they have on that roster, it is not surprising to hear that obviously, because of the tragic death of Flip Saunders, that they essentially have a coaching opening. And there are a lot of coaches, a lot of really good coaches that are looking for work, that are looking at Minnesota and saying, I want in. Now, this is not to speculate on Earl Watson's future, but the Suns could be that next team coming up if they hang on to these young players, that people say, hey, here they come, you better get out of their way.
Yeah, I agree. And you've got to commit to building that young talent. So I think that's our time here.
Are we out?
We're out of time here. Great always work coming in here, and working with you, Jeff.
I was looking forward to this the second I knew that we were doing this together.
I hope we get to do it more often.
I hope so, too.
So
Brad, take a week off.
Hey, take a month off. We're happy to sit in here for you and do this. Or pay us to do our own show.
Yeah.
I'll take a month off.
Yeah, you're doing football and baseball shows. Give us a show. This is the Brad Sesmatch Show, by the way. Am I closing this out?
Sure, why don't you?
Oh, I don't know. I've had practice. It's Tuesday. It's nice to have you with us. Sports360AZ.com, AZCentral.com.